Hier ist Simply Focus mit Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilder for live and joy and ease.
Are you ready for this new episode of the Simply Focus podcast? Then please welcome your hosts, Elfie Czerny and Dominic Gilder.
Howdy y'all and welcome from Texas. We are in Lubbock and just yesterday we drove from Santa Fe through beautiful landscape to Lubbock, Texas.
We are very excited to be here with Benjamin Finlayson today. Hi Ben.
Howdy. I'm excited y'all are here.
We too. We had a wonderful day today with you. Thank you so much for showing us around Lubbock and, well, introducing us to the heritage of this wonderful city.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm glad.
We are standing on a parking lot next to the Ranching Heritage and next to Texas Tech University, and I was fascinated to see the stadium of Texas Tech football team.
Well, and talking about Texas Tech, Ben, you're a PhD student in the Couples, Marriage and Family program at Texas Tech. You know Sarah Smock-Jordan quite well, who was a professor here and now is at the University of Las Vegas.
I know.
Yeah, and you're a solution-focused champ here at Texas Tech. So thank you very much for being here with us, and we're looking forward to talk with you about your work at Texas Tech, about your academical career, and so much more. So to start,
what fascinates you about solution focus?
There are several things. And I think part of it started with maybe my relationship with Sarah Jordan at Texas Tech. And I think as learning therapists, trying to figure out what we do in the room, what we do with our clients, is quite intimidating. But what was intriguing to solution focus to me is I didn't know that it existed as a model. My apologies. at the time, I didn't know. But I had a very helpful mentor at the time that just kind of pointed out some things that I was doing, some ways of being and some ways of speaking that just seemed natural to the solution focus questioning and language. And I think that's what really fascinates me about solution focus is I begin to dig deeper into the theory and the methods and how it came to be, learning this appreciation of language in that it's how we use words and how we interact with others that can cause and promote and inspire such change with people just by changing the way I speak, in the way that I listen, in the way that I respond. It's just fascinating, and it's fascinating, such a shift in a paradigm of role that language plays in our lives, I think is really what is powerful and unique to solution focused.
Wonderful, especially your focus on language. And we met each other for the first time at the SFBTA conference in Boulder, and it was just so fascinating. Whenever I heard you talking, I felt like you're very deliberate about how you use language and your voice. And you just mentioned everything, or a lot started with your encounter with Sarah Smock-Jordan, and I'm curious, how did she inspire you along your way so far?
There's been many ways, but I would trace it back to interview day. I mean, starting my master's program, there was just a genuine air about the way that Sarah carried herself, even in that interview process. And I sat down with her at lunch, and we were talking about research. And I said, I'm not too focused in this particular type of research, but I really want to know more. And at the time, and still is, research around sexual minority identity and how that plays out in the therapy room and the process. And so we just engage in this dialogue and this conversation, and it was just so natural. And at the time, I did not know who Sarah Smock-Jordan was and what she has done, but I knew that I was talking with someone who was highly esteemed in their work. But you didn't feel that way in that conversation. You felt like you were talking to a person you've known for years. And so as our relationship developed through the program, the way that she leads in a solution-focused way, almost from behind, of giving you exactly what you need, just a little bit past your reach to kind of push you that way. And I fell in love with that. I fell in love with not only that type of therapy, but that way of being as a professor. And I attempt, to the best of my ability, to carry that with my students that I'm currently teaching as well, is what do you hope to get out of this? You're here for a few months, of the year with me. When you leave here, how will you know that this class was worth the thousands of dollars you just paid to sit here and listen to me ramble on for an hour of your time? So I think that is one of the ways that she has shaped my career in many ways, not only as a solution-focused practitioner to encourage me to learn more, but also just how to interact differently with students and the role that that can change and the inspiration that can come as a result of being a different type of leader in an academic setting can inspire and create a different culture for students. And that was probably the biggest takeaway that I've really enjoyed being able to use.
And you're a therapist, you're using solution focus in therapy, you're a researcher using solution focus in research, you're a teacher, you're using solution focus in teaching. In what other ways does solution focus come into play in your life?
As odd as it may sound, I definitely think sometimes I ask myself solution-focused questioning to deal with things. Going through a lot of transitional changes in 2018 and looking at 2019, finding myself asking, what is going on? And what would I be doing differently that would make me feel as where I need to be going? And I think this kind of reflects back to maybe how solution-focused or how this mindset kind of came to me in many ways in early childhood, thinking about developing an authentic self or what it meant to be Ben in this world and living in West Texas and being part of a sexual minority community in this area, trying to figure out what that meant. And we were talking about musicals earlier. And I think in many ways, musicals helped me find myself. And then looking back, realizing, wait, I've experienced that before. What was it about musicals that I felt like I could be myself? And in which ways can I do that now? And that was early in my undergraduate career. And then 2018, seeing that same kind of mentality of when things aren't going well, wait, I know what it was like. In which ways can I bring that back into my life? In which ways, and I think we had talked about losing my voice in 2018 and feeling as though I was just stuck in this place and seeing all the ways in which I was stuck and not the ways in which I wasn't. So I see it just in the way that I interact with myself, quite frankly, in the most selfish way of how I navigate my day-to-day relationships with self and where I want to be with research and therapy and academics.
Wow. You mentioned 2018 and 2019 kind of transition, and you also mentioned wonderful story today about your invitation as a guest lecturer just before Christmas.
Yeah, and it was just wonderful to listen to your story about that, because you were invited to talk about the holiday depression, and I would love you to share a little bit how you approached this topic and what you talked about.
Sure. So this presentation came off almost the heels of the SFBTA conference. It was early December, and it was to the Association of Fundraising Professionals, which is a large group in town. They're all involved in some sort of way with fundraising, whether nonprofit, for-profit, and involved in business in various capacities. But they have a monthly meeting and typically invite someone to come in. And they asked if I would come down and do one on managing the effects of the holidays, maybe the stress, the anxiety, the depression that may be coming around this time. And I had recently watched a TED Talk about, we give these wellness presentations and often they're not about wellness, it's about sickness. And it's about all the ways in which we're sick or how we become sick and not about how we can be well. And I said, that's what I want this presentation to be about. And looking back at the SFBTA, we were in a session with Heather Fisk and she had us write down the 10 things that bring meaning to life. And I said, I just love that. I thought that was so powerful because we got in groups and we shared those. And so I wanted to bring that to this group of professionals. And I made jokes within the entire time. I said, this will probably be the last time you invite a therapist to give you a presentation because I'm going to ask you to get deep. So here we go. Hold on. And we did this activity. I said, write down the 10 things and then share them with two people around you. And they did. And I said, okay, well, what surprised you? And I just remember one so poignantly and just so powerfully that what shocked them about that list is what was not on that list. The things that they had thought brought so much joy and meaning to their life was not on that list. And when followed up, said, well, what about those or not? Why, in what ways did that not make the list or what about it? And they said, you know, I think it's just the fact that it has become so much of a burden to me now that it used to be something so joyful and is now something so burdensome in many ways. And I'm almost excited not to see it. And I don't know what that means for me. In this case, it was volunteer work. I'm feeling that they wanted to give, give, give. And then by extending so far, feeling so burdened and not having enough. And they said, I'm interested for what this means for me going forward now, knowing that maybe something needs to be different. And then another one remarking on the fact that it was the small things that made the list. And now they have, as the point of the exercise, 30 things to think about that will bring meaning to their life this season. to get them through, to navigate past some of the harder moments that we may be facing in that season. So it was really, really powerful and really unique to do it with a group that was not a bunch of therapists. They were not used to social work or clinical psychology or talking about these things in a professional meeting at lunch over chicken. And I brought Hershey's Kisses so they would respond to questions. You know, it was just very different, but they were so open to it. And I think it brought a lot of powerful conversation to the table too. It was really fun.
And I'm sure they will invite another therapist or maybe you to their next meeting again. It's a really meaningful conversation for them and with them.
Talking about well-being, this is another field you're very passionate about, and you just recently wrote a paper on pediatric work and solution focus. What is it that fascinates you about this topic, and what did you write about?
So this topic has been on my mind for a while. Doing medical family therapy has been something I've been interested in, and that's really what got me into therapy from starting out my journey with pre-med and then doing the internship in the hospital with a child life specialist and realizing I want to be on the emotional side of healing. Let's talk about this process. And then that's where MFT came along as well. But this paper in particular is kind of a passion project. It was in response to a class project, as many of these research papers sometimes start out in a PhD program. But it was with a colleague of mine, Greg Hall, and I, and we have a project at Texas Tech integrating into the pediatric trauma unit at UMC, which is the university hospital affiliated with the medical school here. And looking at the fact that we are missing something in the way that we were treating children and families that have experienced some sort of trauma, whether it was related to the accident itself, how the accident was acquired, or even the stay in the hospital is traumatic in and of itself. We were missing something in the treatment process, and we wanted to integrate solution focus into a different setting. We've seen the studies where it's been integrated into emergency room settings and in outpatient and diabetes management care. We see it coming into hospital settings. We said, let's find another place for it. And with this project that we're starting at Tech, it just fit very well together. And we thought, if we can introduce something, if we can introduce a tool that would be approachable, that would be tangible for not only therapists going into the hospital, but for doctors and nurses to learn and have a way to communicate differently with these families, let's do it. Let's create this paper together. So it's been quite a passion project. And even Sarah Jordan has jumped on as well. And it's just been a fantastic resource to have. And then one of our professors, Cameron Brown, as well, is on the paper with us. So.
And what did you find out?
So what we're finding right now, this paper portion is just the theoretical portion. So backing why SFBT in this population when perhaps TFCBT may be already used. And so what we're finding is that the hospital stay is very short for many cases, especially in this area where it's rural healthcare. Many of these families are coming from surrounding communities. They cannot take off work to come see their child. And if they can, it may only be for a few days or a few moments before they have to go back, which has sadly been the case of several clients' experiences, and that's very difficult. And so how can we be the most effective in those moments where we have them for at least one session? We have them here. And what we're finding is current literature already integrates the biopsychosocial spiritual model into a lot of medical family therapy. The work coming from ECU with Jennifer Hodgson and Angela Lamson already integrates the BPS model. So we didn't want to take away from that. This is what people are familiar with. But what we're finding is that solution focus can almost tuck itself in very neatly to facilitate those conversations. So rather than focusing maybe on deficits, we're still focusing on biopsychosocial spiritual, but we're having different conversations about them. In what ways and in how often were you not having these experiences, or in which ways were you adapting well that you were surprised about this last week? So we're still getting the same assessment in many ways, but we're talking about these assessments in a different way that encourages hope and facilitates maybe more agency and communion for the family and for the patient in the hospital as well.
And how is this received by the nurses and by the doctors who have to do something different now?
It's been a pretty well received from where I've used it already. So we're still in the beginning phases of integrating into UMC. So I haven't been able to see it in that hospital just yet. But from the work in my master's program at Covenant Levelland, which is a rural city outside of Lubbock, about 30 minutes, they want to have these conversations with their patients. Doctors and nurses want to know how to help. We're all fighting fighting for the same goal here, which is patient health. We want people to get better. And they've been very receptive. And it's not that we're asking them to completely relearn everything. It's just introducing a different conversation. And from that, they've been very appreciative in that we can collaborate together on what they want their clients to see. So rather than my patient is non-compliant or all the deficits, well, what would your patient be doing that would let you know that they're complying or that they're understanding? And then same for the patient. How would you know that your doctor understands what you're trying to tell them? Because there's a lot of just unintentional miscommunication. And it was very well received when I was there. And I think it can be very well received when integrated.
And it told us this wonderful story of how successful your practice in this rural area was and how well everyone worked together really for the better of the patients and the people in the community. What do you think made the difference there that this was possible?
There were a few factors that went into it. And at AAMFT one year, it was in Atlanta, I think that was 2017, sitting in a presentation with Jennifer and Angela, and they mentioning that you need to find your champion in the hospital. Find that person that has your back, that understands what you do. And I found that to be so true. Levelland was a wonderfully unique experience in many ways, and I'm forever grateful for that because the doctors and the nurses, they want their patients to heal. They want them to find that comfort, but also they valued mental health in a very powerful way. And so for that, I was fortunate to step into a place that was already waiting with open arms for mental health conversations to be happening, for someone to come out there and help in any way possible. And so facilitating that conversation was almost the easy part in many ways. But I think it was being persistent and always reminding them of my existence in some ways, going by their offices, stopping in, hi, Dr. So-and-so, how are you doing today? Is there anyone you'd like me to follow up with or check on or do this? So just always being present and having that air of, I'm not here to replace anyone. I'm here to add to the system. I want to help. I'm here to benefit and just tell me how I can do that, I think is what made that so well received. It wasn't a threatening presence. It was just, I'm here and I want to be here and I'm excited to be here. So, hi.
How did you do that?
Oh, goodness. I blame my sometimes obnoxious personality in that I will facilitate a conversation with a brick wall if I have to. But I think just being present was the biggest key to that success. They even gave me a little cute little room to do therapy in. Y'all, like, this was such a unique opportunity. They gave me a space. I didn't have to do it in a closet anywhere. I mean, it was super cool. And he even had his own little restroom and his desk. Super cool, super cute. But it would have been easy to stay in that room and be sad that no one was coming to me. No one was reaching out to me. I'm here, but no one's coming to me because I'm sitting in this place. And so I think it was just getting past my fear of introducing myself and my fear of, I don't want to be a burden on these people, and just being in the way in the most polite way possible of, I'm just hanging out. How you doing? Can I stop in your office for a minute? Let's have some coffee. So I think just being annoyingly present helped in many ways. And I think just my personality just can be that way.
Beautiful. And if I would ask those doctors there or nurses or the people you dropped by in the office, and if I would ask them, what did Ben do that made it easy for you to tell him with which people he should talk or to connect with him, what would they tell me?
So there's another master student out there right now, but I think they would tell you that both I and she, the master student out there right now, make ourselves approachable in many ways and offer many ways of communication through business cards. In the most millennial of senses, I printed my first business cards going to this site because I thought, business cards, what is that? Do I have those? Do I need those? So giving them that resource and then giving them pamphlets and then giving them flyers. So they always had some sort of avenue, some sort of way to reach out that made it approachable without me needing to even be there after a while. They just had that.
And also handing it out to their patients to be able to connect with you.
Yes. Yeah. So we had flyers and pamphlets also in the clinics available for anyone that wanted to take them, because we may miss something. And though the doctor may recommend they reach out to me or that I reach out to them, they have the right to say, no, I don't want this. But hopefully they take a pamphlet or they take the little magnet and it sits in their purse or it sits in their truck or it sits on their fridge until maybe they decide they want to use it at that time.
And what difference did solution focus make, you think?
without having hard evidence, I'm going to give you Benjamin's interpretation of why solution focus was effective there.
It's so beautiful to see your academic answer to that.
You know, cite. So I think what made it useful is this was an area that was so longing for and been asking for help within mental health practice. And solution focus, I think, offered a different way of asking these questions. I think in many ways that system was in healthcare can be very tired. They're exhausted. These doctors and nurses are working long hours and are overrun many times. And so it's easy to get frustrated and feel as though progress isn't being made. And I think what was beautiful about introducing solution focus to this area is the fact that it shaped a different perspective, not only of patients, but of the doctors. When I would talk to patients about how they felt about their doctors, we'd have different conversations around how they felt they were listened to, or did they feel like their needs were met today? And if they weren't, what would have made them feel like this was a useful trip to the doctor, or that the doctor understood them? And so I think it just shaped the hope that they felt in many ways, that their patients were doing a lot better than they thought, or that their doctors were listening more than they maybe previously perceived. And so I think it offered a little bit of hope to conversations and a hope to that what we were doing was good and was effective and was useful. And it added to the team, it added to the healthcare team, and wasn't a detriment for them or a threat.
In our conversation at lunchtime, you also mentioned the importance of being out there. And those are people in rural areas who have no access to other services. And you being out there and not only waiting in your office for them to come, but also going out there and inviting them to have this conversation. And they are having this experience with you or with your colleague. And now you see the difference from back then to now. Your colleague is fully booked, you said. And
yes.
So it's really popular service. And being in Lubbock, you mentioned that, and we saw that when we came here, that Lubbock is kind of out in nowhere. It's like five mm-hmm. hours to or 6 hours to Albuquerque, 5-6 hours to Dallas-Fort Worth. And there's so many people out there in these rural areas who might not come to Lubbock because they cannot afford that, or because they don't have the time to do that, because they need to drive for 2 hours to come here to have a conversation like that. So the importance of being out there and really having those services, solution-focused services out there, I think that's one thing that really fascinates me, being here and seeing that.
I think just adding on to that, it shapes maybe how we also perceive therapy. It was my experience out there that some coming to sessions felt as though they were walking into an experience that would never end, that they would be in therapy for the rest of their lives, or that they would be here for the next 6 months or whatever the prescribed amount of time was. And I think there's an approach to solution focus that almost makes therapy more approachable and less threatening, to realize I'm not going to make you be here for 5 weeks. Maybe we talk today and that's all you needed. And today you feel good. And today you feel like the next week you will be okay. But maybe the week after you call and you want to schedule an appointment, that's okay. We can do that. And I think that made therapy less cumbersome and less of a commitment or a fear of, oh man, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. I'm going to have to take off of work to be here. I think it made it more approachable in many ways.
I love that. And I love to hear your passion of working with people and making a difference where you are, and the difference not only for your patients, but for the whole system. And this is so beautiful to see, because we are interrelated, we are connected to each other, and to have this systemic view, and that you with a conversation can also help people seeing the value of other people more, the contributions or how they are seen, is just beautiful to see. And at the same time, you're very interested also in research. And I'm mm-hmm. very curious to hear from you, like, what is it that fascinates you with solution focus and research?
I think solution focus research in many ways, and it's very similar to the work that's been done on microanalysis, which I already told you, I don't know a whole lot about microanalysis, so I'm going to avoid that. But it almost puts into literature a picture of maybe how we're doing things or what we're doing, and maybe the difference it can make or the potential it has to make. And that's what I find so beautiful about research, is it offers the opportunity to not only say, I know what I'm doing is effective because I'm doing it and I say it's effective. Research offers that conversation, that opportunity to say, this is not to say that anything is better than anything, but rather this just kind of shows that I believe what I'm doing works. And at least the people that I've interacted with maybe feel the same way too. And this research kind of shows that this maybe could make a difference. And I think that's what is good about research. I think in many ways, conversation about research, it becomes, well, research is to disprove or to prove that this is more effective than this. For some research, sure. But I've never felt that that's what solution-focused research was about. It was more about finding the ways in which these conversations can make a difference. Not that anything is better than others, but this has power and this has hope and it offers something to our clients. And we want to show that to you, that there is ways we can show that this makes a difference for our clients and for the people we interact with.
So what are your best hopes for your research that you're currently doing and also for your future research?
Excellent question. So best hopes for my research currently. We'll start with what I'm kind of doing academically is introducing more ways that solution focus can help change perception. And I mentioned it at lunch, looking at the solution building inventory and those questions that can be asked. And there's a few studies done by Sarah and some of her colleagues that by asking these questions before coming into session already has made a difference in the way that they view themselves. And so it got me curious just in general populations, if we talk about problems differently or how we view ourselves in relation to these problems, will that make a difference? And so a study that Greg Cameron, Sarah and I are all kind of doing as well is looking at locus of control. So how do you perceive your ability to change these problems? And if I ask you these sets of questions and then ask you to reflect on this problem again, do you view yourself differently in relation to those problems? Are you more in control of doing something different or of the way you view yourself in relation to just the rest of the world? And that problem becomes less significant and less present and less powerful. So that research really has a passion project for me in that I'm hoping to kind of take it in towards looking more at ways we can better serve sexual minority and gender minority victims of hate crimes, and how can we engage conversations differently around healing and around trauma work that not re-traumatize, but actually instill a new locus of control and a new empowerment, a new sense of healing and hope that can come out of these life circumstances that can't be changed, but how we are in relation to the problems that result in them maybe can change.
And what first answers did you already find to that?
It is still in the model phase. We have not yet sent out the surveys, but with the research backing it, is we do know that asking the solution building questions already change your perception in how you view yourself to the problems that you come in with and how strongly you rate them as severe or not severe. So we're excited to see where this takes it with the locus of control and how you view yourself. So then also looking forward for best hopes is how we can integrate more solution focused conversations into hospital settings. And not just from a therapeutic standpoint, not just from a medical family therapy standpoint, but how can we engage in conversations differently as medical administration, as teachers of medical students, teachers of nurse practitioners, of physicians? In what ways can we engage solution-focused questioning and reasoning that way? So I'd like to see where that develops as well and where that kind of takes off and goes, in which ways we can get the entire system almost of healthcare thinking differently outside of this problem-focused or more disease model lens, medical model lens, which there are assessments that need to be made, there's things we need to do, but there's also different ways we can have those conversations.
And what you say makes us very hopeful, and we are also very curious what you find out in the future and how that supports the solution focus being out there even more in medical settings, even more in the LGBTQIA community, in dealing with gender issues and hate crimes and all those issues of life where solution focus can be and will be useful. So we're very much looking forward to your results and to what you find out and how you influence all these systems to the better.
Ben, if there is one thing you would love people to take away from our conversation today, and maybe also one thing you would love to share with our listeners because it made a difference for you in your solution-focused journey, What would this one or those two things be?
I would hope that people were able to take away from this conversation, from us talking here today, is that solution-focused is not just for a therapist, or it's not just for counselors, it's not for just the mental health community, it's not our privilege privileged concept, but rather I hope it spurs in them some sort of want or some sort of curiosity to understand in which ways does language or is language currently shaping their interactions in the workplace or with their friendships or with problematic situations, in which ways it's shaping the way they're perceiving those problems, and how can that be impacted by the way that we talk about those. So that would be my hopeful takeaway, is that it encourages them to open up to the dialogue of language, to meet the challenge of reassessing what they know and what they understand about language and the power that it has associated with it.
Wow.
And from your solution-focused journey, if there is an additional thing you would love to share?
From my solution-focused journey, I think my takeaway and my hope from this story, and I think what it brought me even to solution-focus theory, is to stop resisting. Would be my takeaway from this journey is to allow the life experiences to happen and to interpret those as they're happening. Me, it was a lot of hindsight looking back on life experiences that I've had, and I think perhaps being less resistant and more willing to the life happening around me would have even brought me to solution-focus or this type of thinking even more soon. Sooner or even more quickly. So to open yourself up to life and to change.
Wow. Open yourself up to life and to change. Wow. So let's come to the challenge of the week.
My challenge of the week, if you could do between now and the time that I see you again. I think my challenge for the week, we've really talked a lot about different conversations and having them in different places that are unlikely, in medical settings, in businesses, and in guest lectures, how it can make a difference, even for people that we're not expecting it to. So my challenge would be find that one conversation, find that one situation that you find yourself being bottled up or resistant, conversation that you're most hesitant to have, and open yourself up into ways that that conversation could maybe be different. For that one colleague that you don't get along with, how can you listen differently to what they're trying to tell you, and how can you communicate differently just with at least one conversation this week that presents itself as a challenge? How can you look at it at least two different ways from a different standpoint? That'd be my challenge. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we are curious to hear how this challenge of the week goes, so let us know and comment on our website. Go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to this episode number 50. We have a celebration today. Woohoo! And you'll find all the resources that Ben talked about in the resource section of this podcast.
We're very much looking forward now to spend another evening in Lubbock and then head on to Fort Worth, Texas. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and hear you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So long.
So long, yeah.
Y'all.
Thank you, Ben.
Do you like the Simply Focus podcast? Well, help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast an excellent rating on iTunes and Google Play and other platforms. Then don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others by commenting at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. Then go to this episode. This was the Simply Focus podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Odad, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.